Minnesota's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night. You can hear us on your app if you download 760 KFMB on your search engine. And also, you can hear us on iymoney.com. We take out all the commercials. You can hear us there in the podcast on Monday. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a best-selling author. He's a philanthropist. He is a marathon runner, very accomplished. He's an all-around good guy. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Joe. I just got here from Davis Cup.
Oh, you won again today, huh?
I had to go see the Bryan brothers play double.
Hey, did they win today?
They won today, so at least the first match tomorrow means something.
Well, we got to win sweep tomorrow, and that's going to be tough because we're down 2-1 now, right?
Yeah, we are. Did you have fun out there yesterday, Joe?
I did. Thank you for the tickets. Yeah. I had fun hanging out by the live band there, and I never saw tennis. It was cool. I mean, you're out in left field in Petco Park.
Can you imagine a clay court laid out on top of the left field grass? It's so cool.
I think I read it was 50 tons of red clay from Italy, by the way.
It's Italian clay, exactly.
Yes, how about that?
Yeah, cool stuff.
Anyway, what a great day.
Well, it's just a neat setting. I mean, I've never seen tennis played in a baseball stadium before, and you know the live band's out there and everybody's cheering and
I think they're going to have to pay to resod the entire field. That was part of the deal, I think.
They have to pay to resod the entire outfield.
Yeah. So that I wonder if it's the entire.
I guess not right field. It didn't really affect right field.
Well, I don't know.
Because they had that part roped off.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out when we get the Padre owner on here right before the season starts. We're working on that too. So
we're going to know.
Yeah. I don't know if he's owner or CEO. It's Mike D. But CEO.
Yeah.
But anyway, Davis Cup. Now you were at the library last night too, right?
Yeah,
right?
I'm down there for a lot of things. So on the other side of Petco Park, of course, is the brand spanking new 450,000 square foot San Diego Central Library. And we had a big event down there last night. It was the 48th annual local authors exhibit. So at the 48th annual local authors exhibit, about 300 local authors and their works were featured. And it was like homecoming week because there were a multitude of guests who were there. I mean, guests of this radio show, prior guests who were in attendance, best-selling authors, not only me, but Jake Ducey, you remember him, Into the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
William Gladstone, Power of 12. Greg S. Reed was there, Stickability.
Huh.
Of course, previous guest, Rob Quigley, the amazing, amazing architect,
right.
Genius behind that amazing edifice.
Uh-huh.
And then the keynote speech was done by, of course, the head of the foundation, Mel Katz.
Another guest.
And Mel made an amazing presentation. Did you know, Joe, that the new library is getting 3,200 visitors a day.
Huh.
The old library would only get about 800 a day. So it's increased traffic by over 4 times.
It's spectacular.
It's beyond belief.
Yeah. And so. Rob Quigley's office, I think office/residence is around the corner. And I got a private tour. They're just going to have a grand opening of that. That is a really neat building.
That's a neat building, too. I saw that walking over.
Yeah.
So it was a busy weekend.
Wow.
All down there in the gas lamp around Petco.
Congratulations. So everyone's books were on display?
About 300 books on display. They're going to be on display for the entire month of February. I was over in the sports section along with such luminaries as Mel Proctor, the former announcer with the Padres, and local baseball historian Bill Swank. Everything else was about baseball. I was the only guy that was about tennis, but everybody knows my book isn't really about tennis.
Well, now, a lot of people may not know, but there's a whole wing of the new library that's dedicated to baseball, right?
Yeah, and I was chatting with Mel about donating my entire baseball book collection, which is one of the largest in the country, to the library.
Don't check, because he'll get it off, you know?
That's okay. I got nowhere to put it. I've got nowhere to keep it anymore now that all the kids are gone and I'm living in a small beach house.
He wants my 1964 New York Yankees base signed by the Yankees, and it's signed by Maris and Mantle and the whole team.
You want to keep that, Joe.
Yeah.
You want to keep that.
I might have to just go display it. I'll be standing next to it in a glass case. I just heard about these Stradivariuses disappearing, or Stradivarii, whatever.
Stradivarii. Okay.
So.
Well, hey, anyway, let's get to our show. The neat thing about the 450,000 square foot library, and you know, it's 9 stories tall, if it wasn't a nonprofit, it would be like the classic, how's this for a segue? It would be the classic cost segregation project.
Hey,
but it's owned by a charity, so it doesn't really apply. But I think we have some cost segregation experts on the line, do we not?
We do. I think we have on the line, he's been on the show before, and he supports our show, and we appreciate it. But with cost segregation analysts, one of the principals is Joel Greshkin. Joel, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Hi, guys.
How you doing? I'm calling in from where? Louisiana or?
Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas.
Okay, and is Kurt calling in too or just you tonight?
He was going to try to. I think he might be a little under the weather, though. I got a text that he wasn't feeling.
Okay, either that or his phone lines are frozen down there in Baton Rouge.
How's your weather there, by the way, Joel?
You know, we got off the plane about an hour ago, and it was 71 degrees.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it's warming up.
Now, yesterday, it was like 29, I think, is what they told me.
Holy cow.
Warm enough for a Super Bowl.
But it's supposed to be in the 30s here in the next 2 days.
So okay.
It's just, somebody here can't figure out what they want.
So what brings you to Austin, business or pleasure? Or
A combination. I have two granddaughters down here. And my son and daughter-in-law, so we're back and forth a lot. And I've got some clients down here that we're doing some work with while I'm here.
Excellent.
So it works out well.
So, Joe, you would love to do a COSSEG study on the library, right? I know it's irrelevant because it's a nonprofit, but have you been in that building?
I have not yet. That's something that's on my list.
Oh, you would like, your heart would start racing and you would faint.
Well, for
you know how I think, Richard.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Well, for guests who are not familiar with cost segregation, Richard, who might be tuning in for the first time, maybe we ought to explain to them what Joel does in their specialty before we get into some other things. What do you think?
Well, we'll let Joel explain his specialty.
Yeah. How about doing that,
Joel? Quick background on cost segregation.
Sure, absolutely. Cost segregation is basically an alternative way of taking depreciation on your commercial property. So any kind of commercial real estate is doable. But, you know, typically when you buy a building, most CPAs are still using the old, we're going to just do straight line depreciation, which means you deduct the cost, the value of the land from the purchase price, and what's left over, you divide by 39 if it's a typical commercial building, or if it's an apartment project, you divide it by 27.5, and you take equal parts every year. Until you use it up or you sell the building. The problem with that is most people don't hold the building for 39 years or 27.5 years, and there are a lot of elements within a building, both interior and exterior, which don't really have a 39-year life or a 27.5-year life. There are, in a typical, let's say, a hotel, we're probably going to find, anywhere from 20 to 30% of the building cost and the land improvement cost is something less than 39 years. A big portion of it is going to be 5 years. There'll be some 7-year property, and there'll be a great deal of 15-year property.
And can you give us some examples of what kinds of property 5, 7, 15 look like?
Yeah, as we look inside a building, let's say a hotel, the simple things like carpet, wall covering, window coverings, the moldings that are used, crown molding, chair rails, wainscoting, all of those things are 5-year property. Cabinetry, wall shelving, wall units, typically 5-year property. Why would you depreciate that over 39 years when you can take it all in 5, eliminate your taxes, and improve your cash flow? If you go outside the building, walkways, driveways, landscape, drainage systems, a lot of things you can't see, a lot of the undergrounding, a lot of the soil prep is all 15-year property.
And what are some of the typical amounts of savings in tax dollars for some clients? You just ballpark it for folks. You save them significant dollars, right? I mean,
absolutely. I think I'll give you just a quick example. One of the apartment projects that Richard's familiar with was about a $12 million basis in the project. And when we got through with that, this was actually a property that the owners had 4 or 5 years. So the IRS allows us in that case to go back and recompute all the depreciation from the date the property was acquired. And you get to take the difference between what you've used on straight line and what you could have used, which you could have taken had you done this from the very beginning. And in the case of this $12 million property, having it 5 years, we basically came up with a tax benefit of around $650,000.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
And the website again, Joel, for our listeners, CostSegAnalyst, right? Is that it?
Our website is costseganalysts.com.
Right, costseg, S-E-G, analysts, plural, .com. And all your information is there. A lot of your other case studies and clients are listed there, right?
Absolutely.
That's great.
I think the thing that people need to realize now with the tax code changing, and I think we're going to talk about that, there are other benefits to be had with COSSEG. And part of the key ingredient now to a COSSEG study is making sure that a project is broken down to include all the systems that make up the building. Mm-hmm. And we can talk some about that because it's critical to have that information just to go about doing the normal things you have to for your tax return.
But quickly, give us some systems, because after the break, I want to talk about repairs and maintenance. But before the break, tell us about, there's 8, 9, 10 different kinds of systems?
You'll have anywhere from 5 to 9 or 10 systems in a building. And that includes the HVAC system, plumbing. If you have gas in the building, a gas distribution system. You're going to have the basic structure of the building. If you have elevators, they're considered a system, or escalators are considered a system. All of what we would have typically considered the 39-year property components of a building, after we've pulled out all of the short-life property, all fall into systems.
Wow, that's great. Hey, we're going to take a break right now, Joel. Come right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life right after this. Hang on. We're back with more of It's Your Money in Your Life and that great Peter Gunn music and Joel Grushkin of Cost Segregation Analysts out in Austin, Texas. Welcome back, Joel. And Richard, where do we want to go now?
Hey, Joe, I want to talk about repairs and maintenance. There was something that happened at the first day of this year, January 1, 2014. It wasn't just New Year's Day. There was even bigger news than that on January 1, 2014, and it related to Cost Seg. Can you tell our listeners what that was?
Well, basically, the enactment of some rules that have been several years in the making that deal very heavily with how you account for repair and maintenance items on your real estate. And as I mentioned earlier, this idea of breaking the building down and getting the system values at the point of acquisition of a building become very critical under this new law. And because you have to make a series of comparisons to determine whether an item can be expensed that you would typically have considered a repair or maintenance item, or whether you have to capitalize it. And one of the tests is comparing the cost of the repair or the replacement of an item. And we used to kind of just compare it to the what we paid for the building or what our basis was in the building. And you can no longer do that. Now you have to compare whatever the part was to the cost of the system that it's part of. So we talked about plumbing. If I have a building, and let's say I've got some apartments, and I decide I'm going to replace all the toilets or all the sinks or all the tubs, or I'm going to replace all the bathrooms. We see this now at a lot of hotels where they're going to go through and renovate all the bathrooms. Well, if I do that and I'm going to replace all those sinks, I have to compare the value of those sinks with the plumbing system because those are all component parts of the plumbing system. If I don't know what the plumbing system was valued at and I don't know what the value of those individual sinks or faucets or tubs were, I can't make the decision that the IRS wants me to make.
So keep those receipts, hotel owners, right?
Well, the issue with the receipts is really that if I go buy a hotel that's already in existence, all I know is what I paid for the hotel.
Ah.
If I don't have someone come in and break all the elements of that hotel down, I have no values to use.
Yeah, because what you're saying is let's assume you buy the hotel and you rent rooms out for a year or two while you're getting your plans drawn to do some renovation. And then, let's say in the second year, you start redoing all of the bathrooms, you know, everything that's in them. You're saying that if you haven't calculated the cost basis that you can allocate to those bathrooms, then when you put the new ones in, you can't expense the old one. You have to keep depreciating the thing for the rest
of
eternity almost.
That's exactly correct. And part of this new law, for the first time, allows you the ability to take a write-off for the things that you're tearing out of the building that have not been fully depreciated. So if I bought that hotel 3 years ago, and now I'm going to renovate, as long as I had a study done that broke out all of the values for the various elements of that property, and I've only been depreciating it for 3 years because depreciation starts when a new owner buys it, then I'm going to be able to depreciate, let's say it was 3 years, so 36, 39ths of those values haven't been depreciated. So I can take a write-off for that. Now, if the building obviously was a hotel that was built 10 years ago or 12 years ago, when the calculations are made through a fully engineered cost segregation study, we're going to take into consideration the age of those components.
Of course. Of course.
But you're still going to get a benefit because before, anything you tore out went in the dumpster, and you got no value.
Of course, there
is. We actually have a hotel that we're working on, not a big renovation, about a $6 million renovation, and the actual tax benefit for the first year for the client was $1.5 million on a $6 million renovation. That's serious money.
Aren't they recycling a lot more, though, and reusing as well, Joel? Does that...
Normally, what happens is a lot of that stuff might be might be given to a charitable organization that's going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's a lot of the stuff that comes out that's not recyclable, just because of the difficulty of getting it out.
Mm-hmm.
Tubs and things come out in pieces typically.
Mm-hmm.
These rules are effective January 1, 2014. So this is to many, many CPAs, this is still news.
Yes, it is. January 1, 2014, and part of the issue is you can go back. If you have a client that did a renovation in 2013 or 2012, we can go back and catch up on that as long as it's documentable. And if they've got records, if they've taken photographs, we can see what was there before, and we can, if you had a cost segregation study done before that did everything, not just, you know, just pulling out the short life property, but broke out all the elements. We can go back and do that. But right now, the feeling amongst most of the firms is that's going to have to be done for your 2013 tax return.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wait, there's a slight possibility it could get carried over to the 2014 return. But at this point, the IRS still has not given us a final word on it.
Hmm.
We know, though, that we can do it for 2013.
Right. And so it's a big opportunity that I think a lot of CPAs and even worse, their clients aren't aware of. That's why we're trying to get the word out. Hey, Joel, in the last couple of minutes that we have with you, we were talking on the phone last week about some little oddball things that relate to cost seg. And one is this issue of how one might allocate a purchase price in an acquisition and how sometimes buyers make some big mistakes. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, I just actually went through a situation where we were asked to look at doing a cost segregation study for a group that acquired a hotel. And in the process of questioning them to determine what their real basis was, you know, what they paid for it, land values, that sort of thing, we uncovered that they had agreed to an allocation in the purchase agreement. So in other words, their particular seller had allocated a certain amount of money to land, a certain amount of money to the building, had been depreciating a certain amount for furniture, fixture, and equipment, and spelled it all out in the purchase agreement. The client agreed, the buyer agreed to that allocation. And so now they're basically to the point where they will be filing taxes and showing those allocations. They came to us and wanted to see if we could do a cost segregation study for them so that they could break out the short life property. Because when somebody does furniture, fixture, and equipment, that's the easy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's the elements in the construction that we break out that are short life, and then all the systems. The problem they face now is because they agreed to a specific allocation in the purchase agreement, they are not allowed to do a cost segregation study going forward. They've locked themselves into what the seller has had actually been doing.
Yeah, and that's a big mistake. And I don't know why anybody would necessarily ever agree with an allocation like that, but I guess for whatever reason, it was important enough in the deal that the buyer was okay with it. Hey, Joe, we've got to go to break.
Yeah,
really appreciate you jumping off an airplane, literally, and then calling us, because again, this January 1st date, so many people don't know about it. And this is so important for real estate owners who want to improve their cash flow.
Let's give his website, costseganalyst.com, or go to our website, iwaymoney.com, and you can find Joel's information.
Joel, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Joel. We'll come right back.
Good morning, guys.
Right after news, sports, and weather. Hang on. All right, welcome back to the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life. Over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Thank you, sponsors. That includes UBS, Michael Koronch, and Drew Freitas. Couldn't do without you, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Just heard from Cost Segregation Initiatives and Joel Grushkin, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Best CFO service out here on the West Coast, Jason Kruger, CPA with Signature Analytics. Our favorite estate planning and asset protection attorney in town, Brenda Geiger at Geiger Law Offices. She's got a big event coming up on February 12th, protecting your loved ones for Valentine's Day by making sure all your estate planning documents are up to date. So check out that event up in Vista. Paul Polito, CPA, and Don Epic, CPA with Polito Epic CPAs up in Vista, gearing up for tax season. Regions Bank and Mr. Sean Puckett, best business bank here in San Diego. And, of course, Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, helping business owners understand the values of their businesses and improving those values and improving how they address the risk metrics surrounding those businesses. Last but not least, we got a big event coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday down at the Omni. That would be Servant Leadership Institute. They've got their winter conference. Ken Blanchard, Stephen M. R. Covey, Dick Enberg, Bill Walton, lots of great speakers in town. Thanks again, Servant Leadership Institute. I'm going to be there for a couple of days. That should be a lot of fun. So thank you to all of our sponsors. And Joe, how can our listeners find out more about our amazing sponsors?
Well, if they just get on our website at iymoney.com, there's a sponsors tab, a drop-down menu there. All their information is there, their phone numbers, emails, their background information, all terrific and tops in their field, hand-selected and personal colleagues of Richard and with a lot of success over many years, right, Richard?
Yeah, I'm working, I think, with about six of them right now on all kinds of different things. So it's like a full house.
So it's a real collaborative effort.
It is, absolutely.
They're not out of the phone book. We vouch for their professionalism. So
is there such a thing as a phone book anymore? But anyway.
Well, the online phone book.
The online. But Joe, we want to keep talking about real estate. We've got a really neat guest, but I'm going to let you do the introduction.
We do. We happen to have someone who's tops in his field in the field of commercial real estate. He represents tenants. He's the managing director of Cassidy Turley. His name is Tom Van Betten. And Tom, good evening. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
It's excellent. So before we get into the show, born and raised where, education, and how'd you find your way to San Diego in a minute or less?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I feel like I got away with one because I was born and raised in Las Vegas where my dad was an English professor.
I mean, people were actually born in Vegas?
Yeah, I know that.
Hey, I think Mel Katz is from Vegas.
Yes. So.
There's only a few of us, the natives, but you know, my dad taught at UNLV. I ended up going to UNLV. Someone in the dining commons, I was going to go into banking. Someone in the dining commons said, I'm going to commercial real estate. Someone over there is making hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I said, I got to check that out. And basically I've been on commission my entire working adult life. So,
okay.
Some of that was in half of 10 years in Las Vegas. And then, you know, I didn't want to raise my family there, to be perfectly honest. It was a wild place to grow up.
And you there when it was a boom or a bust in terms of in the real estate field?
Well, I was there in the 90s. I was doing industrial real estate there, so it was a boom. I mean, essentially the market doubled while I was a broker. We were selling land, we were leasing projects, we were selling buildings. I mean, the town was going crazy. So
I think they're going to have some water issues, as are a lot of towns, but water's going to be... affecting construction and a lot of things, right?
I see those pictures of Lake Mead, and they don't look like the lake that I grew up with. Yeah, for sure.
Not as much water there. But what got you into the tenant rep side?
Well, you know, my career's taken me through a lot of the facets of commercial real estate. I sold land, like I said, in industrial. When I moved to San Diego, I got into the landlord representation. So I was representing a lot of these Class A buildings and landlords that included, you know, REITs and the Irvine Company and pension funds. And then I got, you know, timed it perfectly. I got into investments and I was going to sell these buildings in 2006. So so that's how I got antenna representation. About 2006, I realized I needed to, I wanted to switch it up. I wanted to change. I didn't really find myself as the landlord listing agent wasn't my calling. And so I've really enjoyed being a tenant rep because you're helping the businesses in San Diego grow and thrive and build strategy around what they should be in their real estate.
Okay. And you wrote a really cool article in the Business Journal. It's called The Lost Art of the Interview. What's that all about?
Well, it was interesting. As I got into tenant representation, I realized that rarely do decision makers, which are typically CFOs or CEOs, do they actually set up interviews and go through a series of questions with a candidate. They basically typically get a referral from someone they trust, and then they just run with it, with no idea of what they should be looking after. And it's really because they don't know what questions to ask, because they really don't know how to interview a broker, because it happens every 7-10 years. So this was the article set up kind of like the top 5 things you ought to look for and why you should interview, because it's a big decision. You can leave a lot of money on the table.
What's one or two important questions that someone needing a tenant representation might ask? Obviously, you're getting referrals, but...
Well, I think one of the analogize tenant representation to surfing. As someone that tried to learn to surf when I moved to San Diego and continue to try, there's really no way to learn to surf without surfing and riding waves and being in the water. And it's the same with tenant representation. It's all transaction experience. I mean, you have to have, with every transaction, you learn something. So after 1,000 transactions, I think I'm pretty good at it. But if someone cold calls you and gets you at the right time, and maybe they've been in the business a year and a half, and you have no idea because, again, you don't know what questions to ask. And that's what my article was about. So
interesting. And what about people who don't like using brokers? I mean, here's a real life example, right? Okay. I ended up firing this client. I'm a CPA by training, right? And so a few years ago, a client, I won't mention the business or what they do because, personal stuff, but they said, we're going to move to a new space. And I said, well, you need to go find an expert to represent you on your new lease. And they said, well, we don't really want to do that because the landlord will get mad at us because they'll have to pay a commission. So they go out and they represent themselves, right? And so they go out and they get a lease and whatever. And so the business is going on. And then, like, this is a real live example of how this can hurt you. Like, 2 years later, they decide to sell the business, okay? Well, they put the business up for sale, and everybody who's interested in buying it points out that they're paying like 25% over market, on their lease payments, which of course affects the value of the business because somebody coming in has to take on the last 5 years of that 7-year lease. I fired the client because I don't work with stupid people. But I mean, can you comment? Do you see that happening, or was that just an aberration?
Well, I do. I knew it firsthand because when I worked for landlords, I saw how, prudent they are on really trying to build a relationship with their tenants. I mean, they really try to build this emotional relationship so that the tenant almost feels guilty by hiring a broker, which is really so interesting because representation, you wouldn't walk in a court of law without a lawyer, but why are you going to go into a lease negotiation against someone that does it all day, every day while you're building your company and try to compete? So, I mean, I have several stories of where the landlord initially said, hey, I'm not paying a commission. And I've typically got clients to pay. I mean, if I've saved you $400,000, my clients don't mind paying me, part of that.
Right. Right. Yeah. So that was just a huge mistake these poor folks made. And I just, whatever.
It's a scare tactic that, businesses need to be aware of.
Yeah, how can anybody love a landlord? I'm just sorry. I mean, you're not supposed to love your landlord.
Yeah, it's a partnership.
it's a business partnership, but there's no love involved. Okay?
Yeah, it's not Thanksgiving dinner table, stuff.
So give us another one of your 5 important questions to ask in an interview. I'm just
Well,
curious.
I think, really, I get all geeked up on strategy.
Okay.
Because when you're negotiating with a landlord, many of my clients are renewing their leases. They've made a commitment to a space. Their lease expiration's approaching. And the market's maybe dropped or whatever it's done. You still need to renegotiate to today's terms. And, a lot of times, the way to get better terms is you need to get your landlord to believe you're not going to renew. So you need to build a credible relocation perception. So, you have to get the competitive environment built or your landlord's going to take advantage of the situation. So one of the biggest questions in interviewing a real estate advisor is, what is your strategy to help me negotiate the most favorable terms? And those strategies can be from A to Z. I'm happy to tell you a few of them. But you really find out in that interview process if someone knows what they're talking about with that just basic question.
Yeah, you say to your landlord, hey, I can't meet with you today because I got to go out and look at new spaces that I'm going to rent.
Yeah, right. That's it. I mean, it can be that simple. It's a, hey, you need to really, it may be whether you, at least you got to engage the market. I mean, sure. That's one of the basic rules is landlords are smart enough to know if you're in the market looking at other buildings mm-hmm. or not.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Hey, I'm looking at your website here, Tom, and you've been selected one of the best places to work in San Diego, 160 professionals in 5 offices. Are you in charge of all 5 or just your local office?
Well, actually all I'm in charge of is the tenant representation practice group. Mm-hmm. So we have a local managing director, Dan Broderick, who's been in San Diego a long time. And we're one of the largest, depending what day it is, the firms, commercial real estate firms in town. Mm-hmm. And then our firm is a full service firm. So in other words, we'll have folks that will sell, large apartment complexes, small apartments, capital markets. They'll sell big buildings, small buildings. They'll represent landlords and industrial and office. And then I do tenant representation. Huh. We have property management, project management. So it's a true full service firm. And so, I leverage all those resources for my clients.
Tom, yeah. Website, email, phone number?
Yeah, I mean, hey, real quick, give my the website's CassidyTurley.com, San Diego. You can click through to Tom Van Betten. My direct email is tom.vanbetten@CassidyTurley.com, 858-546-5488. I'm happy to just answer a quick question. I might be able to save you a lot of money.
Right. And plus, you can go to our website, iymoney.com. We'll be running this podcast all week long, and Tom's information will be there as well. So real easy. Anyway, we'll take a break right now. We'll come right back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back with It's Your Money, Your Life with the Managing Director of Cassidy Turley, Tenant Representation, Tom Van Betten. And we are back. Where are we going with the home stretch here, Richard?
So, Tom, can you talk about some submarkets? I was traipsing around Gaslamp for the last 2 days between the thing at the library and Davis Cup at Petco, and things seem pretty hot down there. What are rents doing? Are there different places in San Diego that are doing different than other places?
Yeah, no, I'll speak to that quickly. Little Italy is an exciting place. I have a small architecture firm that's looking around there and can't find anything. I mean, that place is really hot. Downtown, in general, is heating up. I mean, they got some real new development opportunities there in the Idea District. But downtown, the existing buildings are a little bit old and tired. They are getting repositioned. So it's kind of going through a bit of a renaissance, I think. But what's really hot is UTC, Del Mar Heights, and Mission Valley. I mean, that's where the vacancy's low. I mean, UTC is down to 6% vacancy. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was... the rents are back to the peak pricing, before recession.
Sure.
In Del Mar Heights, I recently got a proposal for a law firm above $4 a foot.
Wow.
So, I mean, we're back to the heyday. Yeah. So that's on the softer side of things. If you're really looking for a deal, Carlsbad continues to have great opportunities. The vacancy is above 20%. Really, believe it or not, they're still leasing themselves out of a development boom that's almost 10 years old. I mean, if you think about this, a lot of this was built in 2005, 2006, mm-hmm. and here we are. Some of these buildings, granted, they traded hands 2 or 3 times on the debt side, but it continues to eat away at their vacancy. And then the I-15 corridor, Scripps Ranch in specifically. Also have the high, Scripps Ranch is a 25% vacancy factor. There's some great deals out there. It just really hasn't seen the activity that we've seen on the 5 corridor.
And a lot of the product in Scripps is sort of old. I think like downtown, a lot of the stuff needs a facelift.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of getting someone's getting old and tired and needs to be, repositioned.
The Golden Triangle, that's always jammed, right? You can't get in there.
Yeah, the Golden Triangle's real. Corridor. Cassidy Turley's in the Golden Triangle. I'm negotiating our own company's lease. We have a floor and a half in the plaza. Rents have went up almost $1 in the last couple of years. So, wow. I mean, for our company, who's 30,000 feet, I mean, that's 30 grand a month that, that's going to mm-hmm. impact our bottom line that wasn't there a year ago. Yeah. So it's real, we're seeing some real rent growth.
So Tom, question, a lot of people say to me, is there even going to be a viable business for you guys in 10, 20 years? Because people no longer are trending towards people not wanting brick and mortar. Also, there's this thing called creative space where people are living and working in the same place. I mean, you see that in the gas lamp all the time now.
Especially with startups, what's going on
with some of these? Because, you know, this traditional concept of everybody, every business needs to have an office, it's not necessarily true.
Well, it depends on the enterprise, obviously.
Right.
But what innovative things are people doing now in this field?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because if I could tell you how many tenants just literally in the last 6 months that said they wanted creative space, I mean, it's more than my whole 20-year career before that. But defining creative space is another thing. I mean, it really is something that where people feel energized and really, optimize their productivity within the space. So what does that mean? Well, it means a lot to different companies. If you're in, one of the fire industries, well, finance, insurance, real estate, you know, you can't really deviate too much from the old, private offices and the typical standards. But when you have these tech companies or these innovative style companies or these early stage startups, you really see they want space that's very different. I mean, just to talk about a few of the things that come up. One, first of all, they don't work. We're talking about millennials. We're talking about people born in the 80s or 90s. These, in the next 5 years, there's going to be, essentially the workforce is going to be 50% consist 50% of the millennials. So what do they want? They want natural light. They want fresh air. I mean, they want to open the windows. They want to come and leave when they want. I mean, they don't care when the building hours are.
Sushi bar, masseuse.
Sushi bar. They want to bring their dogs to work.
Doggy care and child care. Why not?
cafes, gyms. I mean, it's and I'll tell you, the landlords are playing catch up, because that transition of the baby boomers and the traditionalists leaving the office and the millennials coming in and the X and Y generation. I mean, the landlords and the buildings, they're playing catch up. Unfortunately, some other cities are well ahead of us, San Francisco being specific.
There's that company, SAS, I think they're in Raleigh or someplace, and they just really, provide a lot of amenities for their employees. And, people love working there, and retention's great. And as long as, I guess, if they're producing and the company's thriving and profiting, why not, right, Richard? I mean,
well, yeah. I mean, people work differently than they ever have in the history of this country. Mm-hmm. And
well, the internet's changed everything. And computers have changed everything.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah, but and SAS is a great example. They were, and then Google. We have a lot on the West Coast. But there is a misnomer that it costs more to be creative, and that's not necessarily the case. Let me give you a case study. A company called Perch, PIRCH, is changing the way you buy kitchen and bath appliances from old dusty warehouses to high dollar malls. Mm-hmm. And so they do. I recently represented them in their corporate headquarters. Now, if they were to go into Class A, they would have been paid $4 a foot. They went into a concrete two-story building in UTC, so it's in the submarket, for essentially $2 a foot. Mm-hmm. So half the rate. Okay. So over a 5-year deal that was on a 30,000 foot transaction, that was $3.5 million in savings from not being in Class A. So they took $500,000 of that and put it into their space to make the inside of the walls really cool.
Essentially, they took their office, their executive office, and their retail display spaces all under one space.
Well, they did it. So they have the UTC,
which is cool.
The store is in the UTC mall, and the headquarters is just down the street.
Oh, okay.
But the headquarters looks like a store. I mean, the culture transcends their real estate. And, there's a gym in there. There's a kitchen in there. They have a chef in there. I mean, it's just one of these things that people are happy to work 10 hours a day.
I think we have to take a tour over there this week, Richard. Work up an appetite.
I tell you, it's a beautiful thing. But I'm seeing a lot of that. I'm seeing a lot of companies just really wanting open ceilings.
Well, we're going to give them a plug, because if people in UTC want to see what they're offering, it's PIRCH, The Perch, and you said they're across from the Sports Authority somewhere?
Yeah, from the sports store in the UTC Mall on the east side.
That's beautiful.
You got to check them out. It's one of the most beautiful showrooms in the country.
I'll definitely get up there within the next week.
So, Tom, quick question about millennials. Are they coming into your business? Is that an attractive business for young people, or is it?
It is, but really where they're it's hard to compete with some of this, the new technology. I mean, essentially the wealth built into a startup organization that can really maybe, you hear a couple of these stories like Instagram selling, for $1 billion and things. And we're losing talent to San Francisco because of that. Mm. I mean, it's definitely a challenge for San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, if folks want to get a hold of you, Tom, again, it's tom.vanbetten, B-E-T-T-E-N, at CassidyTurley.com, or get on our website. We'll have the whole podcast on there for you folks to listen to. And we are just about out of time. So who do you like in the Super Bowl, Richard?
I've been picking Seattle the whole way. How about you, Tom?
You know, I'm going to go with the experience so I'm going with the Broncos.
I think Seattle by a couple of points, but boy, who knows? The line's been favoring Denver.
Well, Joe, you can't pick Denver, Joe, because you said New England was going to be there.
No. I'm picking Seattle. But anyway, we got to wrap it up. Tom, thanks very much for being our guest. Joel Grushkin in Austin, Texas, thanks for being here. And we got to thank Justin Hart, our sound engineer, for making us sound great. Where's our music, Justin? Anyway, you have a great week, everybody.
Thanks, Justin.
And we'll see you next week. Have a great Super Bowl party. Bye-bye.